From retro myths to modern day masterpieces, we'll be breaking down the universe's most pondered gaming questions. Join us as we journey through our childhood memories. We'll be diving into what it meant to us growing up through the dawn of the internet. The Cake is a Lie podcast with your hosts, Gareth and Jamie.
So welcome into episode 12. This is going to be Prepare for Titanfall and the game we're discussing today, which is going to be obvious now before people start listening anyway.
Space Marines 2.
Yeah, Space Marines 2. It's all a lie. Is Titanfall 2, which is a game that I needed no preparation to do this episode, basically. So it's very much me going to be taking you on a journey through the game. And we did this kind of with Metal Gear Solid, where we went on like a, you know, a journey through the story and looked at the boss fights and so on. Apex is not the game we're talking about. Titanfall 2. Titanfall 2 is going to be a little bit different, I think, because the story is not that big a narrative, let's say. So for people listening who don't know anything about Titanfall, the universe of Titanfall 2, right? So the story, the whole setup. It's not that important, but let's go through the story. Basically, you have the frontier planets, which is like the edge of occupied space by the humans in the future. And you have the IMC, which is the Interstellar Manufacturing Corporation. And these are the bad guys, basically. These are like Apple. These are Facebook. These are Google.
So these are the Evil Corp.
These are insert evil corporation name. And they basically settle all these outer rim planets, outer frontier planets. I'm thinking of Star Wars, though. The outer rim planets or the frontier planets, they settle all of these planets, and then I think it's like some conflict happens back on Earth and all of the IMC forces have to leave to defend Earth or something like this. I can't remember exactly. And while they're gone, basically the frontier planets develop their own army, basically, which is called the Militia, which sounds more evil than the IMC when you think about it. So it can get quite confusing when you're listening to the story. And then the IMC come back to now take these planets over again and occupy them again. And basically you're playing the role of Jack Cooper, who's a soldier for the Militia. And he is basically defending against the evil corp in this scenario, evil corp. So tell me, what is your experience with Titanfall 2, Jamie?
Well, Titanfall originally, obviously the first one came out. Like, I still actually remember the ads that were released. They were live action ads. Do you remember this?
No.
Oh, we'll put these in the cast.
We're
on the
podcast. We're 2 minutes in and you're schooling me already.
So there's actually, when they first released these, it's brilliant. So we'll put these ads in, we'll find them, we'll put them in the podcast. So
into
they're
the
live
Discord.
Action ads. Yeah, and you'll get pumped the minute you see it.
Okay.
So there's like...
I'm already pretty pumped. So.
I won't even describe them too much. Look, there's live action ads.
Okay.
They'll make more sense and you'll enjoy them a lot more if I don't have to actually dive too much into them. But basically it was their PR for their kind of marketing and advertisement for the game. And I'm not joking. No, probably some of the best gaming ads I've seen to date. So it built a lot of hype. And obviously when Titanfall came out, beyond ecstatic, I remember the intro to Titanfall and obviously you're kind of dismounting and mounting into your Titan. And obviously
yes, I
can just remember the animation, you know, remember when the Titan grabs you and just pulls you into the helmet and the thing shuts closed and you see the monitors
digitize. It's like a three screen monitor and they kind of flicker into life and then you see the world outside again. Oh, it's so cool.
And I just remember that being such like, and it is, it's still like if you played Titanfall, even two, they obviously it does it in two, but it's just such an iconic kind of memorable moment. And it's also, it was like Titanfall 1 was phenomenal, right? But it obviously had the big elephant in the room. It didn't have a campaign.
Of course.
So it was only multiplayer only. And it was probably the most detrimental aspect of Titanfall 1. So, and obviously when Titanfall 2 came out, or when it was announced, huge hype about it. The fact that we knew ahead of time we were getting a campaign, we were all excited. Now, when I got Titanfall 2 on release, and it's probably one of the games out there that it didn't disappoint on any aspect. Like, the story isn't the best story in the world, but it doesn't. It does it. Hey, I'm count, saying my
count,
piece.
No, no. Counterpoint. Right. The story is not that good. I will give you that. Right. It's just a wishy-washy war story. Right. But the character building and the relationship you form with BT, who is your bipedal titan, basically, that's what makes the game. And it's like the story could be anything. The relationship with BT and the emotions and the development of his character, and like the relationship you form as a gamer with the Titan is just second to none in any game.
Like you bond to this Titan, like in game, like your relationship develops and you kind of hook, line, and sinker. Like, but I mean, it happens to you, the gamer, as well. You become quite invested in their kind of dynamic.
You are like Jack Cooper.
For anyone who hasn't, by any kind of fault of their own, not played Titanfall 2, pick it up. It's as cheap as chips. We have it on the Xbox. We've played it kind of throughout. I've played it like several times. Now, I haven't. I remember actually going on to the hardest difficulty, and I did stop, and I'll explain why in a minute.
Okay.
But I play it. It's something I always jump back into, and even just to do the intro mission where you first kind of, and spoilers ahead, so apologies, but do pick up the game. So both Garrett and I have actually literally bought it again today on Steam. It's €4.50 is what the game cost.
And I mean, when this podcast releases, that sale will still have another 2 or 3 days left. So when you're listening to this, you can still get that game for $4.99
for the price of a coffee.
That's the ultimate edition as well. And the online play is working at the moment. And anyway, let's dive into it. Right.
So when I first, when I started playing Titanfall 2, like I said, the story I don't think is, it's a very predictable, right? Now there is some twists and turns within the game, but it comes more of a gameplay standpoint, which you know, obviously. But I think just regards the actual game, I think there's 10 levels. Doesn't sound like a long game, but it's just so dynamically different between each level, which I just think kind of each level kind of introduces a new kind of mechanic, or the fact that you're kind of witnessing this kind of codependent relationship develop between you, Jack Cooper, and BT. And not only is it an emotional roller coaster, but like as you play through the levels, you kind of learn that one without the other couldn't succeed. Obviously, like there's certain levels where, you know, for example, the ground is corrosive, so obviously you being human can't walk or navigate on this kind of surface, so you're reliant on the Titan to get you through. And there's aspects in the level too where the Titan would be kind of hindered or hampered, because they're, in order to navigate or to progress into the next area, there has to be switches thrown or whatever, and that's in a compound which he can't access, you know, that kind of thing. So they're codependent. And I just think, like, just on a narrative standpoint, like I said, the story lacks, but it isn't the worst story. I think it's somewhat predictable, you know, war horror, war hero, you know, you kind of see the trajectory where it's going.
It's essentially Star Wars A New Hope in the Half-Life universe, I would say. That's how I describe it. That's kind of the story. So tell me, before we get into too many details, because I know you're kind of touching on stuff and you're dying to talk about it, but we're going to do it the same as Metal Gear Solid. We're going to go like through the story, even though it's not a great story, but I think the level progression is really important, and the kind of relationship you build with BT and how that works is really important. Obviously, we're going to do the usual thing where we have all the fun facts and so on. So if you're not familiar with Titanfall 2, you're definitely familiar with Apex Legends. I would say every man and his dog has heard of Apex Legends. And Titanfall 2 is basically this universe is what basically started the Apex universe. It's the same universe. Like in Titanfall 2, you have all of the weapons, some of which are identical copies in Apex, some of which, you know, you have the R1 in Apex, and in Titanfall, you have the R201 and things like this. You know, you have the, you know, the triple take, which is the sniper rifle in Apex, and in Titanfall 2 you have double take, which is basically the same thing. And so it's like the earlier weapons, and then they
the Eva shotgun, Apex. You have the Mozambique, you have the wingman, the Kraber, you know, so a lot of weapons do progress in, and the EPG, you can now get that in Apex. It's a red drop.
So tell me, right, the first Easter egg I have for you is, obviously you've played a lot of Apex Legends, same as me, and you're familiar with the Nessie plushies, so the Loch Ness Monster plushies that are left around the place, right? And the theory that I've always heard floated around within the Apex community is that these are supposed to be Watsons from when she was a child and she left them different places and then she spread them about. Do you know the real origin of the Nessie plushies?
I don't.
The real origin is that the developers of Titanfall 1, I believe, shared an image of the screen, basically, for Titanfall, and it was kind of blurry. And there was some kind of thing, some rock formation or something, and people thought that they were sharing a picture of the Loch Ness Monster, right? And didn't really get that this was a blurry screenshot of the game and thought it was supposed to be like a blurred photo of the Loch Ness Monster. In Titanfall 2, not only are these plushies everywhere from like the first level, because it became this kind of Easter egg then that they put these Loch Ness plushies everywhere. And this is before the creation of Apex or the creation of Watson. So this would be the origin story. But there is one particular room, right? And this is in one of your favorite levels, the time shift level, one of mine as well. And you can get into a room which has a giant Nessie plushie. And it's like a ritualistic room. So it's all candles around it, like a church. And there's loads of smaller Nessies looking up at this big giant one. And I believe when you walk in, one of the small ones turns around and looks at you, I think, which is kind of creepy. But yeah, this is the origin of the Nessie plushies in Apex, which is quite cool.
And have you been into that room?
I haven't, but I've seen videos of it. I can't remember exactly where it is. But there's other secret rooms as well, which we'll get into.
Okay.
Which I don't think you've seen.
We'll have to go and look in.
So yeah, we had our story, right? And the story begins in the Pilot's Gauntlet, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the first level. This is the training course, the obstacle course. Think of Tomb Raider with your obstacle course, kind of the same thing. You learn the mechanics, you do a little time trial, you shoot some enemies, you get a score, right? And on the board, we have like a score. So there's a top three and then there's up to 10 places. And all of the names here are different characters within the game. And there's a very special achievement for beating a certain name on this board, which we'll get to at the end. Because I think as much as this is the first level where you do your introduction, this is also the last level that you usually play and come back to. So I think all we're right. going to skip this and we're going to include it at the very end because we have some things that I don't want to give away just yet, right? So the Pilot's Gauntlet is where you basically do your introduction. You meet your mentor, which is Captain Lastimosa. Right, who becomes important in the first game. And it's just a little speed running, mess around place. You get to test out different weapons. Then you dive into the official first level, which is where you meet BT, right? And this is mostly cinematic / tutorial, I would say, for the pilot, right? So you drop onto this planet, you come out of this kind of pod thing, as you'd expect with any kind of spacey fighting game. You straight away start fighting these kind of cyborgs in the distance. Which is the IMC, the Manufacturing Corporation, obviously, Evil Corp. Evil Corp. And then basically you do a bit of tutorial, you do a bit of shooting, and then all of a sudden these small robots, which aren't Titans, but they're robots, drop in and kind of blow you to the ground, and then they're about to kill you. And then one of them gets shot with a rocket, and this badass Titan just comes onto the screen, just kills everyone in sight, and you're like, oh my God, who is this Titan? Look how cool it is. And this is BT. This is your first glimpse of BT, right? And obviously Captain Lastimosa is the one piloting him. Lastimosa jumps out, kind of revives you, puts you in the corner and tells you to stay put and you'll be fine in a few minutes. Gets back into BT and is then overrun by the IMC Titans and is what looks like killed, basically, right? Mm. So he's like knocked to the ground and then you pass out from the tranquilizer you got. You then wake up. And you find a very injured BT who's just about alive. And obviously Captain Lastimosa is more or less dying. And he transfers control to you of this Titan BT. So now you're all of a sudden this kind of novice pilot who's basically become a Titan pilot and just launched into the fray. And your first mission is to find the batteries. And this is kind of like doing a bit of running around ships that have crashed and stuff like this. And you're just getting used to the running mechanics because I think the big part of Titanfall 2 is the movement, right? And you also get your first pilot gadget, which is the ability to cloak for a few seconds. So you can kind of cloak, run up on someone, hit them from behind, shoot them, whatever you want. And then this mission goes kind of very unevently, I would say. You just do the tutorial stuff. You get a bit of fighting in BT. You power him up again. You have a little back and forth. You get to know his personality. And then you move on to the next mission. But before we move on to the next mission, I once told you what BT stood for. And I said that it was Bravo Tango.
Yeah.
But I've also heard that it's Bipedal Titan. And I've also heard that it's Buddy Titan. And then I heard that it's not actually confirmed. I don't like Buddy Titan. Bipedal Titan kind of makes sense. I think I like Bravo Tango the best.
I think it's just phonetic, because I think like Bipedal Titan, then that's every single Titan's BT. Maybe they are. Maybe they're just BT and then their code. But I think unless you get it confirmed from the dev, I think I wouldn't take it as gospel.
Yeah, I'm gonna take it as gospel, and I'm gonna say it's Bravo Tango, because nobody's gonna stop me. And also you get like different loadouts. So you have different weapons in the game, obviously, and you get different loadouts from the Titan as well. So different loadouts come with different abilities, where like one gun shoots, and for every bullet you land is basically a homing rocket that locks on. And then you can choose to fire all these homing rockets at once to kill this target or whatever it may be. So there's a few loadouts. Just play the game. You'll get the loadouts. I'm not going to go through every single one and bore you with the details. But then we move on to, I would say, our first like official mission.
Hmm.
And this is Into the Abyss. Right? No, actually, sorry, it's Blood and Rust. Blood and Rust. We're getting confused already. It's like mission 2. The Blood and Rust one. And this is the only part in the game that I didn't like. So you go down into the sores, and this is what you were talking about, that like the sludge in the sores is toxic, so you need to be BT to navigate around. And then BT can get locked behind certain doors that you have to kind of go through ventilation, go ahead, activate some switches, and unlock for him. And one part of this was very, very annoying. Can you guess what part?
Is this might be the part where I kind of took a break from playing on the hardest difficulty. Yeah. No, just when I was playing it on master difficulty. Was that where all the little kind of bomb drone?
Yes, kind of, that's exactly it. Yeah, so
that's where I kept dying. Yeah. That's where I just got really frustrated.
You have this moment where basically you have to activate a switch, and then you have to basically just survive wave after wave of enemies. And it's these little bomb ticks that you have to try and shoot before they get you, so they explode. And if they get to you, they basically explode and they kill you more or less instantly. And this was the most annoying thing, because they basically have to reload. You run out of ammo. They're coming from everywhere. And on the hardest difficulty, this was the last mission that I passed on the hardest difficulty, because it just took so long to do.
Oh yeah. By the way, if you complete one playthrough, you can just pick missions to.
Yeah. You can pick missions to go back and do on harder difficulty and get the 100% unlock. So this was the one that, like, when I started the game, I loved the start, and then I got to this mission, and this mission genuinely put me off a little bit, which is probably where you stop playing on the master difficulty.
Which is what put me off,
And then I would say after this, so we fight our first boss Titan. So you're fighting the evil Titans, which are the Apex Predators, which is obviously a reference to Apex Legends again, or Apex Legends is a reference to this rather, which is like the elite Titan pilots for the IMC, and you fight them kind of one by one as you go through, and each of them has a different loadout, which you then get after you defeat them.
Hmm.
So the first one is Kane, who is like bad guy JPEG. He's like bad guy in the dictionary. He's almost like a Kano from Mortal Kombat, you know? He's this real husky, what do you want kind of character. And it's like, you know, he's like a pirate.
You're a gay guy. Get the fuck out of here.
No, he's like, he's like the definition of bad guy, right? So he's very generic. But again, the story is not like the strong point here. And this is when you're kind of getting to grips with BT, and you're learning kind of about his protocols. So BT, it's a little bit like iRobot. They have like directive number one, directive number two, directive number three.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of actually, yeah.
And basically the directives are, directive one is link to pilot. Directive two is uphold the mission. And directive three is protect the pilot. And this comes into it at the very end of the game. I don't know if you remember this, but it's very cool. And this is where like the story basically just becomes the relationship between the like BT upholding these objectives. These directives and your relationship with him. And it's all about sacrifice at the end. And the story doesn't really matter too much. But anyway, we haven't really got into the main story of this yet. But you go into the next mission, which is where I think it gets pretty interesting. So this mission kind of reminds me of, if you've seen Star Wars Episode 2, it's kind of like the production factory on Geonosian factory in Star Wars. So where they're producing all the battle droids. You're kind of running down these factory lines. You're avoiding like equipment. Things are moving around. There's a lot of platforming. And you're fighting all the bad guys, right? And this was basically where they were building like houses and also building like the droids and stuff. So you're going through this factory where they're building houses, which is kind of, the perspective becomes really weird here because you're on a production line running through these kind of makeshift houses. And sometimes they're like turned sideways and you're running sideways through a house that's then flipped upside down. And then you're running upside down through the house along this production line. It sounds very confusing because it is, I would say. And then, yeah, you do a lot of platforming through this whole production factory. And then at the end, you come into like what looks like this, basically this settlement on top of like this massive mountain. And then it quickly becomes apparent that it's actually like a glass dome. And the scenery you're seeing is just a projection, basically. So it's just like similar to in Prey at the start, where you're looking out the window and you think it's like this big, vast world. Then you break the glass and then it's like just like this production room behind it, basically. So it's kind of a similar thing. So you're in this production habitat. And this is the like biggest flaw in the game from a speedrunning point of view. Because I don't know if you remember, but you get into this habitat ring place and you defeat like wave after wave of enemy. And then you fight the boss, which is Ash, who's a character in Apex Legends. And in this, you can actually skip this whole sequence by glitching through the wall and getting out. So where where the exit eventually appears, you can basically just run straight to it, go straight through the wall, and you're done with the whole area. So you can skip this whole sequence.
That's nuts.
Yeah, which is weird. You can also do this later, just, and it's almost game-breaking.
Skip the game.
Yeah, so you can skip this whole thing if you want. And the next level after this, which is the one we're going to spend a bit of time talking about, I think, which is Effect and Cause. So I'm going to leave you take over here and introduce this level, because you know it as well.
Right. So mission 5, Effect and Cause. I think this, as I said before, the story is somewhat predictable, or you kind of feel it's predictable. But this level certainly threw me for a loop, and I can imagine Garrett can agree, it threw Garrett for a loop as well. As you navigate through this mission, you need to acquire a timepiece, and this timepiece actually causes you to shift back into the past as well as shifting back into the present. And obviously a big battle has ensued, and there's areas in the map which are inaccessible due to maybe part of the infrastructure is powered down. But you kind of phase shift into the past where everything was pristine and working and functioning, where you can progress past that point, and then you have to transition back in to the present. Now, there's points throughout this mission. It's just mind-blowing because all this is taking place in real time. So there's an area in the map where there's a bunch of enemies and you can see them below you in the floor. Like it's a big glass kind of floor. So you obviously shift into into the present so that the glass is all broken. So you fall through the floor and then you can start to take out these enemies, or you shift back into the present then. And then suddenly there's kind of prowlers that are there.
Kind of like saber-toothed tigers, I would say.
Yeah, they're essentially, so they start to attack you and there's like, you know, 8 of them, and they take you out pretty quickly. So you obviously, you can kind of run around the area that you're kind of enclosed with them and kind of pop back and forth to try and reorientate yourself. Or there's parts of the map where you're kind of actually running, traversing through an area, and you have to constantly pop back and forth because there might be a platform that was, you know, for a fact was present in the past, or it should be present in the future. So it's a bit mind trippy, but it was probably like the most memorable mission I think I've ever played in any game. And it's suffice it to say, like, so if there's 10 missions in this game, every single level that you kind of play through has some kind of intended design or mechanic in the game. It's just phenomenal. So yeah,
it just kind of makes it unique. So like, and to like touch on this time shift mechanic, you have to play this to realize like how incredible this feels, because obviously like the mission starts, this Effect and Cause mission, and you arrive at this research facility, and the research facility is basically abandoned and run down and all overgrown. And then you get this time shift mechanic, and the time shift mechanic takes you back to when it was an active research facility. And what's happening here is they're basically building this weapon called the Fold weapon, which is like this planet destroying weapon. Insert A New Hope storyline where the Death Star is being built. So this is like this ancient weapon of mass destruction that they've uncovered. And this is what all the story has been leading up to. And when you go back and forth, you're trying to like discover what happened to this weapon and where it's gone from this facility. So how did it leave? Where is it now? What happened to it? So you're going back in the past to try and find out what happened to the weapon. And as you said, like this flicking back and forth, sometimes you're trying to balance fighting different types of enemies at the same time in the same room. And like you have soldiers in the past and then you're flicking back and it's creatures in the present.
Like and two different like, timelines.
You're almost like you're taking a break from one to try and recoup, but the other can be worse sometimes and vice versa. And it's like even and like these timelines are not just, oh, I switch back and everything happens there and then it's on hold until I come back. The timelines continue in parallel. So you can go back to the past when everything was running. You can drop a grenade. You can switch back to the future, wait 10 seconds, go back to the past, and that will have exploded and everyone is already on the ground. So these timelines are running in tandem. And it's even to the point where, like, at the end, you meet up with BT and you're fighting other Titans in the past, right? And you go to the past and he's, like, totally overwhelmed by, you know, the full facility. And you can leave BT in either the past or in the present. So you can...
That is mind-blowing.
Like. You can get out of him and leave him there and go to the past or the present. And what's funny is at one point you enter, like, a hangar and there's four robots get off the walls and they start fighting you. And you can go back to the past to when these robots were just like hanging on the wall and destroy them and then go back to the future where BT is. It gets so confusing. Go back to the future where BT is and he's no longer fighting these robots and they've just vanished. Because obviously that's in nuts. The past they would have been cleaned up and disposed of and stuff. So they're just gone. And this happens a lot of the time. And this level is also like an Easter egg dream because of this time shift mechanic because there's so many secrets here. So I don't know if you knew this, but when you're doing the time swap, you like lift up your fist and you clench your fist. And this is like what basically does the time shift. And every time you do that, you have a 1 in 2,000 chance of getting a special animation where he doesn't clench his fist. He does like the okay symbol and then does the time shift. And it only happens once every 2,000 times. Or I think you have a chance. It's not guaranteed to happen every time. And there is another one, which is, this is one for you. It's a Half-Life 1 reference or Half-Life 2 reference. Just a Half-Life reference, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is you go up to, there's three Haz suits on a wall, right?
Yeah.
In the past. And one of them has a crowbar next to them. And they look like the Half-Life Haz suits, basically.
Yeah.
And when you switch back to the present day, one of the suits is gone and the crowbar is gone.
That's pretty sweet.
Which is really cool. Because a big inspiration for the developer or the director and producer was Half-Life. They wanted to create like this Half-Life universe type game and also like aspects of Call of Duty because I think the team was the ex-Infinity Ward team, a lot of them.
Yeah.
So this is where they drew a lot of inspirations from. And yeah, I think that's really cool that they have like the Haz suit and so on.
That's class.
There is another one, which is if anyone's seen the movie Time Cop, right? There's a scene in Time Cop where he's in like this laboratory or something and basically the floor becomes electric and he jumps up and does the splits between two tables and then the floor kills like this guard in the middle because it's electric and he falls over. And there's a room that you can glitch into and you have to basically stand looking at the door and you have to shift back and forth between present day and past 88 times. And when you do, you go through the door and there's a guy, there's like a skeleton doing the splits on the table and there's a guy on the floor that's like electrified basically. And I think that's a really cool Easter egg to Time Cop with the whole time mechanics. Obviously a big inspiration for the game as well.
That's pretty funny.
So yeah, that's effect and cause. And then you basically find out where they took the weapon and you continue on with the game. So the next level then is called the Beacon.
The Bacon.
Remember this? The Bacon. The Beacon. And this is basically you find out now that the IMC has this fold weapon basically and what they're planning to do with it. I think they're planning to destroy some planet. Mm. And you basically, this mission is kind of a bit of a new mechanic as well because this is kind of puzzle solving where you have to traverse all these satellites in the sky and you have to move certain platforms in certain ways to get by. Nothing too intense, but it's a little bit of puzzle solving. And this is a very, very heavy combat one. So with this one, you can actually sneak around a lot. And I don't know if you knew this, but there's places where there's robots that are like in a loading station, like a charging station. Mm-hmm. And if you get to them, because you have a hack tool now.
You can turn them to your side.
You can hack them and you can basically make them work for you. But you can only do it if you get to them without alerting anyone. because as soon as you alert someone, they're triggered and they come and attack you, basically.
Yeah.
So you can only do this if you stealthily sneak around. So, like, this is what we're talking about when we say, like, that this game flicks from one type of genre to the next, kind of. So, like, it's always, in essence, a first-person shooter, but the first level, you're basically in the Titan. The second level, you're playing as the pilot. The third level, you're kind of doing a lot of platforming all of a sudden, and, like, this is the factory one. And then the fourth level introduces like this time mechanic, and now you're back to having like a stealthy element to the game, which is quite weird. And if you play this on master difficulty without using stealth, more or less impossible. You can just forget it. Like, you'll just get destroyed every time.
Annihilated.
Yeah. So one thing I read, which I didn't remember, is that you have the cloak skill, which changes to the time shift skill for the time shift level. In this level, the beacon, apparently you can choose between the cloak, a holo pilot, which like shoots out a hologram of yourself, or a ghost runner, which is like a pilot you can control. I don't remember this in the game. Maybe I just never knew you could change abilities like this.
Maybe, yeah. It doesn't sound familiar to me. Sorry. This is the one where, like, so when you're saying navigating platforms, this is, if I rightly remember, so there's a point in this where BT launches you for the first time, isn't it?
Yes. So this is the good catch. I forgot about this. So yeah, he's basically has to like launch you up. So this is, again, coming back to that thing of like, it just shows you how difficult things are when one of you is detached from the other. So like you had earlier that you detach from BT and then you're like overrun by these creatures. And basically these platforms are like up in the sky kind of. And BT has to launch you and he's about to launch you. And then he says like, you know, the trajectory is this and the velocity I need is this. And it's quite safe to launch you, you know. And he tells you to trust him, right? And then he launches you through the air and you land perfectly on the platform exactly where he says. And then at the end of this level, he also catches you when you fall off the platform at the very end.
And I remember like panic when that happened. And then he catches you and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. And it's kind of like you start to learn to like have a lot of trust in BT because he's always there to save you or help you just in like the last second, you know? So yeah, this is quite a good level, I think. This is like very varied, but it becomes very difficult when you're on the platforms. And I think it's a lot to do with the fact that you don't have BT because you're fighting a lot of robots and all of a sudden these are really powerful when you don't have BT with you.
Yeah, but there's also like the thing I really remember about the platforms is just you're really using your wall run mechanic. And it is.
Yes.
I just remember like the fluidity of it, like just this real kind of I'm doing it. It's like,
I'm doing it, Mom.
I'm doing it, Mom. Yeah.
There is actually a lovely video on YouTube, which is just called A Love Letter to Titanfall Movement.
Right.
And it basically starts and there's a 30-second timer, right? And the guy just starts like running. And he just runs basically in a straight line and it's like 30 seconds and then he teleports back to the start, right? So he does like what's called like the reverse phase, which is like you can run for 30 seconds and then you can hit a switch and it will teleport you back to where you were 30 seconds ago, basically.
Yeah.
Right? So every time he's doing like running 30 seconds, flicking back to where he was running 30 seconds. So he's just from the same start point every time, right? Which seems very, very simple, right? But he does it the first time and he just runs. Then he does it the second time and he runs and jumps. Then he does it the third time and he runs, jumps, and wall runs. Then he does it the fourth time and he runs, jumps, wall runs, and slides. Then he's like adding an element of movement. The last time is like he adds the grapple. And it's just amazing when like at the end of the video, he shows the first time that he just ran. And then like he barely makes it like, you know, 30 meters or 40 meters or something. And then the last time he does it, he just launches into it, like grapple hook straight away, flies across, like skids everywhere, wall runs. Mm-hmm. And he like does like four laps of the whole map in the same time it took him to run like 40 seconds. And you're just like,
that's nuts.
What a skill level, what a skill ceiling level, you know, to have that kind of advanced movement. Like, it's just nuts. I'll link it in the Discord after, but it's just
amazing. Do, yeah.
So yeah, we retrieve this and then we come back. And here's another little Easter egg for you, right? Again, like, this game just wasn't released at the right time. And it was so well crafted, so well polished, and so well finished. You have a little bit after this where you have to go and retrieve the hack tool, right?
Yeah.
So you have to go and get the hack tool and it's hidden like from a robot. And you have to do lots of this dangerous jumping and stuff. And you're kind of going through this underground facility. And you get this hack tool and you come back. And when you land back, you land on a platform where there's like a load of soldiers, right? And if you do this without dying, the dialogue of the soldiers is like, wow, they've really upped the training of pilots and you know, oh, I got to start getting myself in action if I'm going to keep up with you and all this positive stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
If you die more than three times and come back, they'll say different things. Like, this is just dialogue as you're passing by them. And they'll be like, I can't imagine what you went through down there, pilot. And like, you know, thanks for taking one for the team and stuff like this. And it gets like darker and darker the more you die doing this reaction, which is cool. You know, and that's just one aspect of like the whole game where this happens, which is really cool. So on to, so this one was very different. This was again, back to yourself, and it was very much platforming based, right?
Mm.
Then we're on to 8, which is Trial by Fire, right?
Yeah.
And you may not remember this mission, but as soon as I say it, you'll remember it. So this is basically like Titanfall D-Day. Right?
Go for it.
So this is where like you basically, you communicate to the militia, your good team, that the Corporation Evil have the fold weapon and exactly where they have it. So you find out that they have it in this particular military facility. And basically all of the Titans drop in at once, like outside this facility. And there's like gun towers firing at you, and you're all basically just storming this facility. And then you eventually like break through the walls. And this is again, like the gameplay just changes up completely. And now all of a sudden there's like 30 Titans storming this place, fighting bad guy Titans. And you're just like, you know, you see one guy like getting shot at, and then you're like jumping and defending him. And it's just so good. So yeah, this changes it up a lot. And then not much happens in this. This is more or less just a show of like 30 Titans fighting at once, I think.
Yeah.
And like just a show of what the Xbox could do, I think, back in the day. And then, yeah, you have, this is the first time as well, you have like all your Titan loadouts from like the whole game that you can flick back and forth between and just play around with. And this is probably like one of my favorite missions to go back and replay, because it's just chaos, I think.
So what was your favorite loadout though? What was the one you kind of led towards?
I always took, what was it called? I can't remember the exact name, but it was like you just have a machine gun, I think. And then you have the homing rockets with I think it's called the Expedition loadout or something. But the Tone loadout is that you have like this kind of sniper gun and you fire. And if you hit someone with the bullet, it locks a homing missile. And then if you fire again, it locks another. And if you fire again, it locks another. And then when you have three, you can let them all off and they'll shoot the bad guy. And this is good for fighting other Titans, I think, because you can kind of duck behind cover and then fire the homing rockets. What I really liked was the machine gun that has the homing rockets that are like automatic. So you hold like L1, the rockets come out of your shoulder, they lock onto everyone, and then you let go and it fires.
That was kind of the one, yeah. That'd be the one I used to love.
And for certain achievements, you have to use certain weapons. Like there's one achievement if you're going for 100% in this where you have to like... So there's one achievement, right? Where you have to kill 30 people at once, right?
Hmm.
And this is only possible with the Scorch gun, which is like the fire cannon, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's one part in the whole game where a door opens and there's 30 troops standing there and you can shoot them. And you have to kill 30 troops within 3 seconds or something like this. So this is like the only place you can do it. And it's one achievement for doing this, which is pretty cool. And I have 100% of this game, so I've completed it on master difficulty, and I've also got all the achievements, one of which took me probably 50% of the time it did to get all the other achievements. I would say it was so difficult, but we'll get to that at the very end. So yeah, this is kind of a fun, I feel like Trial by Fire is like a fan service level. It's just D-Day with Titanfalls, basically.
But it's kind of like, and gives you that kind of multiplayer experience because you're against all the Titans.
Yes, it does, absolutely.
Kind of like you're kind of like in an arena.
Mm-hmm.
And then flick through it.
Sure. And then we move on to, we're getting into the real meat of the story now, I think, right? So we've been building a little bit of a relationship with BT. And now we're on to the Ark, which is your least favorite boss, I would say, Viper. So this is where you go through this facility, and then at the very end of this facility, you don't get to the fold weapon in time and the ship just takes off at the fold weapon. And then it's basically like, this is like go time then. It's like the cavalry comes in. This is like a Halo moment, you know? It's like the ship comes in, you get on it, and now you're chasing down the enemy ship, and it's like, we got to stop them. They're about to destroy everything. And you have a little rocket launcher, and like you're standing on the side of a ship, basically. And all of you are on the side of the ship, and then this small ship flies up beside you, and it's Sarah Briggs, the kind of leader, basically. Yeah. And she gives you like your pep talk for what you're about to do and the sacrifice you're about to make. And then as she's giving the pep talk is when Viper shows up, the evil Titan that flies.
Mm.
and he shoots out a load of homing rockets and so on. And then you basically get blown up and you fall off the ship. And then you land on like a very small ship, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're chasing down the fleet and you're coming up on this humongous like transport ship, which has like loads of open bays on the side and like railings and walkways and stuff. And like, I can only describe it as kind of like a flying long oil rig or something. You know, it's kind of like half open, half closed.
There's turrets on the side.
Yeah. And there's this huge battle going on. And then basically, I think you're on one ship, and then this
you
ship
get launched again.
This ship catches you basically when you fall off the big one from the rockets.
Yeah.
And then the pilots of this ship say that they're going to get you as close to this transport ship as they can, and then you'll have to get on board basically. And how they do this is obviously they get as close as they can. And then this is coming back to where BT throws you in the earlier scene. So he picks you up and he's about to throw you. And then obviously you're a bit nervous because you're between two flying objects and you're like, you know, just like last time, hey, BT. And then he's like, not quite. There are considerably more variables to take into account in this scenario between two moving objects. And then he's like, I can't remember what you say. You're like, huh? And then he just like fires you basically. And you do land. It's difficult, but you do land. And does he fire you? He fires you to another ship.
He launches you from one ship to the other.
To another ship, and then that ship gets close enough that you can just jump onto the big transport ship, basically, is what happens. I don't know why this happens. I don't know why the first ship just doesn't fly you up. Maybe they can't get there in time.
They couldn't get close because there's guns on the main ship that are shooting. Anything that gets too close. Yes.
Okay. But this other ship got close somehow.
Yeah.
Could be a plot hole here, but we'll skip by it.
Did you know something about Viper, though?
No.
This is
the father of Valkyrie, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So Valkyrie in Apex Legends is Viper is her father, basically.
Yeah, and she took kind of boosters from his Titan and put it onto her.
Yes, so that's what she uses, which is nuts. No, it's quite cool. There's a lot of this because Ash also you fight in this, and she's also a character in the later games.
Yeah,
and Octane from Apex Legends also gets his origins from Titanfall. I don't know if you know this. I think I mentioned it before, maybe.
We'll come back to it. I think you might have actually.
We're going to come back to it in the last part anyway. But yeah, you're chasing down the ship and then this is where it gets kind of nuts and you're running through, basically gunning down. You get halfway through and then you have your hack knife where you take control of the ship and you actually fly the ship. And you have to fly the ship closer to the ship with the fold weapon, basically. And this is just another example of where this game just keeps shifting things up. Like they had this whole flight mechanic. I know it's kind of not that advanced or anything, but you're still controlling this huge ship and you're flying it towards the other ship. And then right after this scene where you get to the other ship, you fight Viper, which is the most annoying boss fight in the whole thing.
I struggled at that.
Yeah.
I first played him.
This is really a nightmare.
There's nowhere for you to really hide.
No, there's like two places you can kind of hide behind, but he can still get to you. And like he's using homing rockets the whole time and you're just, it's chaos, absolute chaos. Then something quite bad happens here and you get captured. BT is kind of really damaged in the end fight. So you kill Viper and then you think he's dead and then he's still alive and he takes one last jab at BT and he manages to basically like injure
mortally
BT, I would say.
Him.
Mortally wound him, yeah. And then you wake up and you've been captured and BT has no legs and he's tied up in this kind of rack thing. And BT has the fold weapon inside him at this point. I think we skipped that. So you found the fold weapon and then you fight Viper. And I can't remember it.
Sorry.
You find the fold weapon just after you get Viper and then Viper like takes one last swing at you and hurts you basically. And then you...
No, he doesn't have the fold weapon yet. So you're suspended. You're captured. BT is in chains. And
no,
then...
but you do have the fold weapon here because BT gives up the fold weapon.
You're right.
Yeah. So I think...
Sorry, you're right, yeah.
I know what it is, right? You fight Viper, and then directly after Viper, you get the fold weapon, right? So you enter this room and you get the fold weapon. And then you come back outside, and that's when Viper takes one last hit at you, I think. No, I know what it is. I remember. Forget it, right? We're on track. You take the fold weapon, And then you're walking back out of the ship, and BT is like limping through the ship basically with the fold weapon because he's been attacked by Viper. And yeah, he eventually, there's this big explosion, and it's Richter, I think, is the main bad guy, Richter.
Mm.
And he basically turns up and he captures you and BT. And then you wake up in chains, right? So BT is tied up and he has no arms, no legs or anything. And Richter is there. Blisk is the bad guy. We're very in tune with the story here. The story's not that important, right? Anyway, the bad guys don't matter. Generic bad guy number five comes in. A Bond villain number five comes in. And basically So BT is like talking to you on your helmet at this point. So you can see text incoming from BT, right? So he's trying to threaten BT to give him the fold weapon, and BT won't open up to let the fold weapon out. And the fold weapon is basically inside BT where you would have been sitting. That's why you weren't in BT. So it's in your cockpit. And it's like this glowing orb, basically. And he basically threatens to shoot Jack Cooper unless BT gives up the weapon. And then the protocol flashes up, protect the pilot. And BT has to release the weapon because it's against his protocol to protect the pilot, his directive. So he releases it and you're screaming at him, no, BT, don't do it. And then it comes up in your screen, trust me, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, trust him. And he gives up the weapon. And then obviously he gets double-crossed and they shoot BT and they execute him basically in front of you, right?
Yeah.
So Bliss gets into his Titan, executes BT, and then you're like screaming and stuff. And then you kind of pass out. You come to, you walk up to BT, and BT basically has like an eye, which is like a cylinder with an eye on it, basically.
Yeah.
And this eye kind of drops off, and inside this eye is like a pilot survival pack, basically, right?
Yeah.
And this has like the gun and the knife, I think. I think the knife is in there as well. But it has like the smart pistol, the knife, and it has BT's core, basically, which is his personality. So then you're like, okay, BT isn't quite dead yet. Then you have the smart pistol, which is like, this is kind of a cool moment because it's almost like something you get in the end game where it's like a pistol that automatically...
overpowered weapon. It's so overpowered. It turns out to be a pistol, yeah.
It's like a pistol that locks on to everyone and one-shots everyone. So you can just literally like run through the level and be like, pew, 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 pew. And it's just like instantly one-shotting everyone. And it's just so cool. So it's like an auto-lock pistol. And there was a lot of like fan things where it was like, so BT had this like OP pistol the whole time and he didn't give it to you because. And the theory is that like BT didn't give you this weapon until it was a last resort because it's not a humane weapon, basically. Because it basically gives you the advantage to just execute people. So he wouldn't morally give you this weapon until there was no possible other option, right?
Yeah.
Which like screams like multitudes for his character. So yeah, then you run and gun through, and then you're kind of on your own and your Titan is dead. And then you have one more mission left, which is basically this last mission now is the fold weapon is the name of the mission.
Yeah.
So this is basically the last stand, you can kind of tell going into it. And yeah, you're running and you have BT's core. And then next thing, they say that we're sending you a new Titan. And this Titan drops down from the sky. And you basically put like the BT unit into this Titan. And this is like BT 2.0. And then you're like, oh, we're ready to go now. We're ready to go. And basically this is like, he has like a loadout that's completely OP from all other Titans. And he's just like destroying everything, basically. And this is, again, like this does become difficult at the end of the level. But this is a lot of like fan service where kind of like the smart pistol, you're just going through and you're just one-shotting everything, basically.
Yeah.
And then BT is kind of having trouble, like, remembering stuff, so his memory is initializing basically throughout the level.
Yeah
And he has like his directives are coming up like one by one as he remembers them, and the first directive is linked to pilot, he's done that. The second directive is uphold the mission, and he's done that. And the third one is still like error not found kind of thing. And then you eventually go through and you do your last few boss fights, not really important, but you get to like the fold weapon, and the only way you can destroy the fold weapon is to jump into it, basically. So it's kind of like one of these geo circle things where all the circles are spinning in different directions. I don't know what these are called. Gyroscopes. And all of these like all of these different levels of this gyroscope are spinning around this fold weapon, and it's charging up the fold weapon, basically. And the only way to destroy it is that BT is going to jump in and he's going to self-destruct inside the fold weapon and destroy it. And he takes you with him. And then you say, you know, we're going to do this together, BT. We've been through all this stuff, and you jump in together. And then as you're falling towards the fold weapon, his last directive loads up and it says protect the pilot. And he basically opens up, picks you, and then throws you one last time, like out of the fold weapon.
Yeah.
And then you survive and he dies, which is like the most heartbreaking ending to any game. It's like, it's so
emotional. Like, I remember when you first lose BT, you feel torn. Like, you're like, oh my
completely.
God.
You're like,
kind of, yeah.
Oh my God. And even when you get BT like 2.0, you're kind of like, yeah, but you're kind of like, it's not quite the same.
No. But so that kind of concludes the story.
Yeah, so like that's, no, the story is actually not over yet, right? So right. You may think the story is over, Jamie, but you don't know nothing, okay?
I know nothing.
So in this mission, there's a couple of glitches as well. So when the new BT drops down, you can actually climb the rocks next to him and get past him. And you can go on and like cheese the level and destroy all the enemies and basically break the level. But I would advise not to do this because it's not really giving you anything. You have this very sad ending of BT, right? And then you have like the ending scene where you saved the world and all this, but BT is now dead. And then you have your pilot helmet, right? And I don't know if you've ever seen this, but I'm gonna spoil this for you. Right?
I think this is what I was just about to say.
Okay, but there's a post-credit scene where your helmet, you're flying back to the, you know, Earth or wherever it may be, on the ship, and there's a post-credit scene where your helmet is sitting on a window, looking out the window.
Yeah,
and
that's what I was going to mention.
The light for your helmet, so like the visor is off, and next thing it just blinks a couple of times, and then the game just ends, right? So the light just blinks a couple of times, and this took a while for like fans to figure out what this was, but it turned out that this was blinking in Morse code, and the helmet says in Morse code, Jack, ? And it's obviously supposed to be BT reaching out to you somehow, you don't know? And this is why like people are just gunning for a sequel for this game, you know, anyone who's played it is just gunning. And it's amazing that like a game with such a poor story can at the same time have such a powerful story, you know, because the game is about BT and Jack. That's all you remember. Like, I had to look up what the actual story was about, but I didn't have to look up anything about Jack and BT.
And that's just it. It's just like the story could have been about anything, but the real story is, you know, them, like, and their interaction and how, you know, they kind of support and navigate through their kind of difficult situations within levels, like, you know. So like, phenomenal game. We've bought it again and again, guys. It's less than €5 to get it. Get it, play it. We'd love to hear your opinion on it.
And again, like, we haven't really spoiled anything because at the end of the day, the relationship thing, it won't come across on the podcast how much this impacts you until you play it and you've been through everything with BT. And you need to play the game to evoke the feelings we're talking about. You can't just hear it and say, oh, that's probably great. Yeah. It's not going to be the same. You know, you need to play the game, and no matter what's spoiled for you, you're still going to get the same feeling when this death happens at the end and stuff like this. You know, it's still tough, but we do have one final, like, kind of post game aspect of this, which obviously there's like online multiplayer, which is still quite active today. And there's another one, which is you go back to the Pilot's Gauntlet, which is the training course from the start. And there's one achievement, which is to get in the top three of the board for the best pilots in the gauntlet. And this took me forever to do. So like, you have to run through and you have to run and gun. Now, there is a couple of things with this. There's a hidden weapon in this gauntlet, which you can like do a couple of jumps and you can get up and you can get this like energy grenade launcher type thing. And apparently it makes the gauntlet run easier. I didn't really like it. I went with the shotgun for my run. So I just thought it was easier. I didn't like this energy weapon because you have to be too accurate with it. Just didn't like it. And also, like, the first person in this gauntlet run that got a really good like world record time was someone who did grenade boosting, which is when you throw a grenade down and then when the grenade detonates, you're a certain distance ahead that it pushes you, but it also doesn't kill you. So you have to like time this really well.
You get a boost off it. Yeah,
you get a boost and it hurts you, but it doesn't kill you, right? And this is where the origin story for Octane comes from in Titanfall, because obviously you're doing the speed running aspect. And there was a Reddit user called Cash Mail who was the first person to come up with this grenade boosting mechanic. And he is basically Octane, and he is the story that inspired Octane, because Octane is said to have lost his legs trying to go really fast and used a grenade to boost himself. and basically lost the use of his legs, which is why he has the prosthetics then. So this is where the Octane origin story comes from. Cash Mail.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty class. Cool, yeah. So that's a nice little thing from the developers to kind of recognize that and bring it through to Apex. But yeah, bad news to end with. Titanfall 3 has been cancelled, obviously, again, which is like the third or fourth time that there's supposedly been a Titanfall 3 project, and now it's like cancelled out of nowhere. So yeah, any final thoughts, Jim, to the game?
It's something we're going to jump back into probably today or maybe our next. I know we're going to play some Space Marines 2 today, but I'd say I'd love to actually dive back into one. I want to see if the multiplayer is going again, but I actually really want to do another playthrough of Titanfall. So again, it could be something we might set up on stream.
Yeah, yeah. And the Gears of War co-op playthrough is definitely stream worthy or YouTube channel worthy at the very least.
We'll get on that. So we'll link in these few things. I got the live action one that I just sent you there. So we're going to watch the live action one together now because I want to see your reaction to it.
Just to get hyped up.
I can't believe you didn't. Yeah, get you hyped.
I'll probably remember it once I see it. Absolutely. But like off the top of my head, I didn't remember. I don't know why. I just didn't.
It's brilliant. This is something like it's a standout. Like I remember, like there's certain trailers that come out in games and you just get so hyped about it, and this for me was like Titanfall. I'd say probably one of the only games that I pre-ordered. It, you know, it was so good it surpassed your expectations. So
yeah, absolutely.
I remember, was it Halo 3 as well? I believe the trailer for that was kind of a model battlefield that was made. Mm-hmm. Like a figurine battlefield, but the music from it is a classical piece. It's Chopin Raindrops. Okay. And I'll link that in as well. Phenomenal, like, movie trailer. I can definitely think of the most impactful games.
I think we could do an episode on trailers, honestly.
Yeah, there you can correlate it back just to not even just about what the context or the content in that trailer. Like, the same, like, Assassin's Creed Revelations. It has, like, probably the best music used in a game trailer. So we'll dive into those. We'll link those anyway. Anything else to finish up with?
No, play the game. Unfortunately, if you do play the game, every other shooter in existence will be completely ruined for you because of how smooth the movement mechanics are in Titanfall 2. Sorry. And you will just play like Call of Duty and you'll be like, why am I running so slow? I want to slide, I want to jump, I want to wall run. And it's just, there's nothing like it. There really isn't. And it's weird to say that apart from Apex, but you know.
Do you know what would be really good? What? If we get enough people to pick up the game because it's so cheap, we could do a private custom match.
Ooh, we could. We could do an online game.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Gaming night. I'm well up for that. Let's put the idea out there.
If enough people die,
okay, guys, we'll do it.
We'll do it. Yeah.
If enough people do it, we'll. If enough people pick it up, we'll do kind of a session, maybe. Maybe even just enter a public game and just have like one side of our team. And then just like play against whoever would be fun.
Well, you can do a custom lobby, even if it's a 4-on-4 or.
Yeah, but I was thinking we could do like, you know, 8 of us against whoever random online, you know, would be fun as well.
Sounds
have
good.
Your own squad. So yeah, we'll leave it there. This has been a fun trip down memory lane. A little emotional after the whole BT.
I actually feel a bit gutted over
it. It hits hard. Like I was describing it and I was like, hold it together. And man, that was tough. So it's a phenomenal game. I usually don't get so worked up over shooters, but this one is just so good. Hey, Clair Obscur, we're going to be doing an episode on, so you better fucking play that, okay?
I'm on it.
All right.
With the other 900 games I've
played. I'm doing an episode with or without you, so it's happening.
All right, so we leave it there, and we shall see you in the next one.
Yeah, see you in the next one. Links to Discord, etc. in the show notes below. And thanks, as always, for listening. Ciao, ciao.
Thank you. Good luck. Bye-bye.